Frank Lloyd Wright would be 141 years old on June 8th, and his life and several of his works will be celebrated with a host of events all that weekend. We'll be talking about it today with Jack Holtzeder, who is a Madison historian, who is a board member of Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin, a nonprofit organization devoted to preserving and sharing Wright's Wisconsin legacy. And what a great list of events that will be taking place this weekend. We'll be talking with him about those events and about the homes that you will have a chance to visit and see. And also, take your questions. Maybe you have some questions or comments or experiences to share. We'd love to hear from you about those questions relating to Frank Lloyd Wright. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, and email us at talk@wpr.org. Jack, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And a big, big event this year.
Big event this year. Well, I think I'd like to say we have a big event every year, but I think this one's very special because, as you were remarking before we got on the air, we have the Gobbler available, that wonderful round restaurant with the dark, well, the black stone walls separated by white mortar and the domed roof between Madison and Milwaukee, and everybody sees it, and it hasn't been open for about 20 years. And the owners have graciously made it available to us for a special event, but it's also a like building by Helmut Ayongo, who was very much influenced by Wright. He's an Estonian-born architect who practices out of Fort Atkinson, and he designed that building about 43 years ago.
Yeah.
And the question is, what's going to happen to it? It's in remarkably good condition. It's been kept clean. Mm-hmm. And the plumbing works, the lights work, all mm-hmm. that business. I don't know whether we'll have the revolving bar revolving. That takes a little bit more oomph than the owners might have been able to put into the building for that one day event. We're having a meal there on Friday evening, a fundraiser for us. And Mr. Ayongo will be there, and we'll talk about the building briefly, and so on and so forth. That's really the highlight for many, many people. But the houses are also terrific. And four Wrights, three likes, and then the Louis Sullivan Bank in Columbus, which is a wonderful building also.
And so there'll be a tour that people can just hop in the car or...
Hop in the car. We call it on the road again. You're not in one town. I would advise people, because of the distances involved, either to start at Beaver Dam in the north and work your way south and east to Oconomowoc, south of the interstate. The last house has an Oconomowoc address, but it's on Lower Lake Nemobin, that lake you see when you go between the two lakes, rather near Delafield, even though it has an Oconomowoc address. And it's a wonderful house designed by John Randall McDonald, and it was a 30-year do-it-yourself effort by the couple who had it. It's just a terrific stone house, and it's a solar hemicycle, and like Wright's first one in Madison, designed, well, 10 or 15 years before the one that was designed for the Shermers. Their name was Shermer. Mm-hmm. In Oconomowoc on Lower Lake Nemobin. Either start there or in Beaver Dam and then...
Work your way one way or the other.
Make your way one way or the other. But if you try to backtrack, you might not be able to see them all. It's a fairly long road trip.
Fairly long road trip, but you have pretty much all day.
You've got from 9 to 5.
Yeah. So a chance to really walk through those homes and...
Yes, and there'll be guides there, docents, to tell you about them. And to hold back the crowd so that nobody tries to jam in at once. That sometimes is a problem with very popular houses. Mm. And the Maury Greenberg house is on the tour as well. It's on top of a drumlin in a south-facing drumlin in Waukesha County at Dousman. And it's cantilevered over the valley below. It's a spectacular house.
Why has the interest in Frank Lloyd Wright maintained all these years?
I think it's because his houses are both beautiful and livable. They invite, they're cozy mm-hmm. in many ways, and they're pretty. Yeah. They look like they fit where they belong. You look at them and you say, what a, you know, just, it looks like it's part of the landscape that it belongs there, and yet people live there, and they're magnetic. Yeah. You want to go inside them. You want to look at them, and you want to be in them. And I've been lucky enough to live in a couple of Wright houses and have been in oodles more. I don't keep a life list. Some people do. And universally, they are very comfortable places that you that enhance your life. And not all houses do that. You have to sort of struggle with them to make them pretty or make them fit you. Wright houses, true, you have to accommodate sometimes to them, the low ceilings. In my case,
you're a tall guy.
Yeah, so, but, and doorways. One of the houses I lived in, I bumped my head always on the kitchen door. If I forgot to duck my head, a little nod to the side, and I was okay, but occasionally I didn't do that, and so on. But when you learn to live with it and accommodate yourself, then you find it's a joyous experience. And that's what any good house, any good architecture will do for you. If it's brutal and you don't like to live there, then buy a Wright house. Something by one of his devotees.
Dave in Menominee, Michigan has a comment or question for you. Dave, hello.
Hi, great. Thank you. I had a buddy of mine come over from Amsterdam last September. And one of the things he wanted to do was go find a Frank Lloyd house somewhere or a design. And I found online a Greek Orthodox church in Wauwatosa that was just stunning, the pictures. So we went there. There were no tours open at the time, so we kind of went on a little treasure hunt of looking for Lloyd houses, which was very fun. But the Greek Orthodox Church in Wauwatosa was just breathtaking, unbelievable. The lighting, the way it was designed, and we stayed there all day and took pictures, hundreds of pictures, as the sun passed over. Uh-huh. The way some of these arms come out from the domed roof, as they go across the building, form all kinds of designs and different, just the techniques are just amazing. And the domed roof itself is so blue that in the pictures that I have, there are some you cannot tell the difference where the dome stops and where the sky starts. It literally is exactly the same color. And we were not able to go inside. I was just wondering, you know, your guest's thoughts on it, if he's been there and if there's any other information that he knows about that building.
Well, asking if I've been to a Wisconsin Wright building is sort of...
You've been to all of them?
I've been to all of them, except the Kinney House in Lancaster. But back to your comments about the church. It has no formal tour program unless you arrange events ahead of time, and it's convenient for the church, and you have to have a group of 15 to go through it. That has been their practice for many years. However, you can go to Greek Fest there. They have an annual event at the church, and it's open. And you can also attend Sunday services. Mm-hmm. Greek services, Greek Orthodox services, however, tend to be very long and in Greek. So be patient, but enjoy. They welcome visitors. The curious are welcomed on under those conditions. But it is indeed a marvelous building and treasured by the congregation. The roof of that place, the domed roof, could be said, although that's a freestanding with our unsupported cast dome of concrete, And it sits on ball bearings in because of contraction and expansion in a channel on top of the base. Now, the roof of the Gobbler restaurant can be likened to that. It is a large dome, but it's supported by trusses. So, and it's not blue. And the other wonderful thing about the Greek church in Wauwatosa is the Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church is that it sits on a campus. Its site is protected by its status, surrounded by housing, but low level. And it's sort of on a slight rise, and it dominates in the area. And it just fits into the neighborhood quite beautifully.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Dave. And you should think about attending this event. It's too bad your friend isn't here. But what are the particulars, by the way, of participating in the event the weekend of June 8th?
Very simple. The Friday evening event is for... You have to register ahead of time because we've got to make arrangements for the food. Mm-hmm. But it's turkey everything. There are turkey worked into the appetizers, turkey main course, et cetera, et cetera. Turkey, little nuggets of turkey on the salad, so on and so forth. We've gone to quite an effort. The family that built it is wanted turkey to become a year-round dish in the United States. And actually, there were a number of turkey growers in the United States who were doing this, and the Hartwig family did it. And it was a great success. Turkey is now a year-round dish. Mm-hmm. But actually, it was a supper club. And supper clubs are on their way out in many ways. We've become a nation of food aficionados that, steak and lobster ain't it anymore. We want more imaginative food and more intimate surroundings. And so the Gobbler, which is 14,000 square feet, it's an immense building. It wasn't fashionable anymore. The dinner and dancing, that sort of thing. Not anymore. Well, the owners have an idea, but maybe you'll hear more in the future. On Saturday, we have a full-fledged tour beginning at 9, ending at 5 for the houses of it's six houses plus the Gobbler and the restaurant or the bank in Columbus. And on Sunday morning, Maury Greenberg has died, and the new owners of the house have agreed to open it for a brunch so that for a limited number of people. There's still some seats available. Mm-hmm. And it's marvelous. You can to be able to sit there, look over the treetops to the south with the sun coming in and making all those shadows and the sorts of things that happen in right houses that don't happen in all other houses. Some other houses, but not all, certainly. So you can do all of those things. To do it most conveniently, you can go online at writeinwisconsin.org and just follow write and like prompts, and you will soon be at a page where you can make your reservations, pay with your credit card, etc. Otherwise, you can call 608-287-0339. That's our office in Madison. And be patient or leave a message. You will be if the woman who manages the office is on the other line, you can leave phone messages and she'll get back to you. And her name is Sherry, and she's a model of politeness. So that it's awfully hard to lose your temper when you're talking to Sherry.
So that's 608-287-0339.
That's right.
For the phone number.
Right, and writeinwisconsin.org.
writeinwisconsin.org. That's probably the simplest way to do it.
Right. And then our organization also has memberships. We have a newsletter. You get some special events, et cetera, et cetera. And you help support a really interesting effort in Wisconsin that relates to preservation and promotion of rights work in the state. We represent really all nine of the open-to-the-public rights sites in the state. We're a clearinghouse for that effort. And we are preserving three buildings of the six on West Burnham Street in Milwaukee. That fundraising effort's a different thing. You would not be directly supporting that activity if you attend Right and Like. The Right and Like event supports our office and general activities. But we have things going on many fronts. It's a terribly busy organization with a group of volunteers that works hard. It's not like most boards.
This is a working board.
This is a very hard-working board.
Jack Holtzeder, our guest today, who is on the board of the Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin Organization, a nonprofit organization devoted to preserving and sharing Wright's Wisconsin legacy. And you mentioned Burnham Street. We have a question or comment coming up about that.
Cool.
You can join in, with your questions too at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Frank Lloyd Wright and the Frank Lloyd Wright and Like 2008 tour with Jack Holtzeder, Madison historian. Really pleased to have Jack back. That event is coming up on the weekend of June 7th, and all day on the 7th you'll have a chance to tour several Wright buildings, homes, and also some architects who are quite like Frank Lloyd Wright.
All of them quite like Frank Lloyd Wright. Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah, we have four architects represented this year. Only one of them is Frank Lloyd Wright.
Will the real Frank Lloyd Wright please stand up? Lee and Okachi is up next. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I wonder if you would speak to the houses that are on Layton Boulevard, which is 27th Street, and Burnham. I used to live in that area, and those houses always looked a little strange to me when I was growing up. But are those all designed and built by Frank Lloyd Wright, or were they other engineers that were copying him? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. In that one block, the 2700 block of West Burnham Street on the north side, every one of the houses is a Frank Lloyd Wright building. There are six buildings in a row. It's the largest single concentration in that space of any of Wright buildings anywhere. They were erected and they were finished in July of 1916, and they were owned by a development company that in turn was owned by Arthur Richards, or most of it was owned by Arthur Richards, who was a developer in Milwaukee and a client of Wright's. He also engaged Wright to design a hotel in Madison that was never built. At about that time, he was involved also, I believe, with the hotel at Lake Geneva. At any rate, those six buildings eventually made their way into other hands. The developer sold them. There are four duplexes and two single-family houses. They, frankly, lost their unified exteriors very early on because it was a kind of stucco and a kind of underlayment for the stucco, a support system for the stucco that were not too terribly compatible.
Okay.
And expansion and contraction took their toll, and the stucco began to fail. So within the first 20 years, the houses received new stucco put on a wire mesh or other forms of treatment. And so they lost their unified appearance, but they're architecturally very unusual. This will shock you, Larry, because you know something about this stuff. The studs are 24 inches on center.
Oh, man.
And they're held together. Remember, the lumber was cheap in those days. So they have sheathing inside and out on the walls, inside and out. Mm-hmm. And then each inside is plastered with a regular interior plaster, and the exterior was given that stucco treatment. And, of course, there was no insulation. this means that and the electrical service then wasn't what it is now, and so lots of modifications have been made in each house down the years, different heating systems, and the kinds of problems that have arisen have been enormous. To restore a single-family 900-square-foot house, which is tiny, two bedrooms, great design, often copied for this that very reason, but with different materials in the construction, to restore it and to make it kind of permanent is costing, over gasp, $500,000.
Oh boy.
And it's also, we're having to meet the standards for the National Park Service, which conducts or runs the National Register Program and also the Save America's Treasures Program, et cetera. We're meeting all those standards and doing this work because it's an important house. And the challenge is the next five houses after.
Oh, man.
And then also, we're making that one house, the first one that we're doing, into a museum.
Mm.
And so it is already open to the public, but it will be open more generously once the whole project is done.
Audrey in Denmark, Wisconsin is up next. Hi, Audrey.
Hi there. Recently, my husband and I were on a trip to Illinois, and we went to Springfield, and there is a Frank Lloyd Wright house there that's completely restored. And it's the Dana Thomas House, and it's now a state historic site.
That's right.
And that house is absolutely amazing. There's like three main levels, and there's many partial levels in between these main levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a maze, actually. And there's 450 skylights, windows, light fixtures, lamps, and door panels that Frank has designed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very large house, like 12,000 square feet. It's one of his first homes. I believe it was built from 1902 to 1904.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now the state of Illinois has possession of it. It's a state historical site.
Yes. Would that Wisconsin would do the same. These are very expensive undertakings, and you've got to remember that the state capital is also Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is the only Wright building in Springfield, which is a tourist destination because of all of the Lincoln stuff that is associated with Springfield. And the state stepped in and saved that building from what would have been, I'm sure, a different fate. It had after it was stopped being used as a dwelling, it was an office building for a publishing company for a long time.
Mm.
And much of the original furniture was there. I cannot remember how many different types of designs for the windows existed, but repairing the windows was alone an enormous job, finding the right people to do it, finding the right glass to replace broken glass, et cetera, the right craftsmen to do all this work. Terrific job. All the furniture had to be rehabbed. A lot of it had been kind of mishandled over the years.
Sure.
And so on and so forth. But I've not seen it myself. Springfield is not – you have to make Springfield a destination.
Yes.
You just don't happen to drive through Springfield on your way to other places generally. And I've never done it. But what the caller said was absolutely true about its magnificence. It's elaborate, and it's not one of Wright's earliest houses. He'd already been practicing for 10 years before he worked on that project. But it's probably one of his largest and most successful houses from that period, certainly.
Thank you very much, Audrey, for filling us in. Appreciate it very much. Jeff in Madison, it's your turn next. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks. I live in Madison. I'm not that tall. I'm 5'11". And every time I go into First Unitarian Society, I have to duck down a little bit. And I can see that in the church, but in all the right venues that I visited, more often than not, I have to duck down to get into them. I'm wondering if anybody really knows what his thinking was about that. I mean, why would a person do that unless he just thought 5'3 is the ideal?
He said he was 5'8. Architecture is a fairly personal thing on the, on behalf of the architect sometimes. And he did bear in mind what average human height was, and he called tall men weeds, including several of his apprentices. At any rate, the reason he did it is because of an architectural technique called compression release. And the Greeks were doing it. It's a pretty ancient trick, actually. That's what it is, an architectural trick. When you enter a space from the outside, if it's confined with low ceilings and the walls not being terribly far apart, et cetera, then when you walk from it into a larger space, the larger space looks larger than it really is. And so you get that burst of surprise, a kind of an aha moment, and or a wow moment. Mm-hmm. And that's why. The ceiling heights, and I was 6'2", 6'1 and a half when I lived in the Wright House that I lived in. I bumped my head often, and the doors, because they were 6'2", and I was just under that. So if I had on a thicker sole than usual or a higher lift on the heel, I'd whack myself butt good. If I was in a hurry, that's when I'd always do it. and so on. The Unitarian Church also, it's really called the Meeting House in Madison, the Unitarian Meeting House, First Unitarian Society in Sherwood Hills. The entryway has been altered somewhat because in the current, there's been some ongoing restoration there. They've corrected some of the deflections that have occurred over the years. I first went into that building in the early 1950s, right after it was opened. And I was then a full 6'1 and a half, and with shoes over 6'2". And I took pride in having to duck my head to getting into it, because I thought, well, I kind of knew that I'd be excited to be inside of it. And so it was a pleasure to go in.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. Nancy in Rock County, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a compliment for Jack, and I was going to ask him to comment on the Illinois home that has been restored and taken over by that State Historical Society down there. It is amazing. And the local docents who volunteer locally in Springfield do mention how grateful they were that the state assumed, and they were actually almost surprised because it was a monumental cost to assume. It's a gorgeous, wonderful home to tour, as is the relatively new Lincoln Museum. It's amazing. You must
I will have to go down there. I
but
know.
My compliment is for you, Jack, because I was on a tour when you led a tour of our state capitol for the Historical Society not too many years ago. It perhaps was a benefit because I think there was a small fee charged. It was amazing, and I urge people in Wisconsin, whenever you are giving a tour or speaking to a group, to, by all means, go hear you. My other question was going to be about the Unitarian meeting room, which I also was there in the early 50s, and was just so impressed with the architecture and the services I attended. No. So thank you for what you do for history.
I'm blushing here.
Nancy, thank you very much. It's always nice to hear something like that.
Well, yes, and I'm very flattered. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks very much for calling. Reed in Clintonville, it's your turn next. Hi, Reed.
Good morning. Say, a question, a couple of quick comments, and then I'll take the answers off the air. Question first is, whether or not there is one home in Oshkosh on Algoma Boulevard.
Yes.
There is, okay. I wasn't sure. Every time I drive by that home, I think that's a right house.
And that is an American system-built house, but I'm not sure about the construction technique because it was put up privately and for a man who worked for a lumber company.
Payne Lumber, perhaps?
No, They made doors and windows and things like that, but it wasn't painted.
Well, maybe Radford Doors or
I think
Morgan Doors.
I don't know. I've seen the letterhead on correspondence, with Mr. Hunt, but I do not know.
Okay. Now, comments very quickly. There is. I got married in Whitefish, Montana, many years ago, 38 actually, and there is a Wright Building in Whitefish, lowly Whitefish, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bank, or was a bank. I'm not sure if it is any longer.
Oh,
maybe at one time was converted to a clinic. And then years ago, when I was teaching college in Illinois, there was a man that we met who was an interior designer from Northbrook, Illinois, who lived in a Wright home, invited my wife and me to come and see the home, told us that he had not liked the first home that Wright designed, and so he asked for a second design. And then, the original plans for the first home, he had someplace in his attic. He couldn't find them.
Mm-hmm.
But he also spoke about the, do I want to say Usonian or utilitarian apartment homes that Wright had designed. And this gentleman's first home supposedly was going to be built out of cement block.
Uh-huh.
So essentially, those are the comments.
Well, thank you for the call, and you've stumped me because I did not bring along my guide to Wright buildings. There are a 400 plus standing Wright buildings, and I'm sorry, I just don't know them all by heart. Mm-hmm. I know quite a number of them. The Whitefish, Montana building, Wright did some designs, and some of the buildings were built for summer lodges and cottages in that part of the world, but it was at Darby, I think. And I'm stumped. I just don't know about that, the building in Montana. In Northbrook, Illinois, I don't know that there is a Wright house with a Northbrook address today.
Hmm.
But he did a lot of houses in that area in general. And it was very common for clients to ask Wright for a design and then reject the first effort. And then he would come up with something else or a modification usually. There was a lot of to and fro. A lot of people say that he was very arrogant and didn't work with clients well. And that happened from time to time when the clients were particularly obtuse and not willing to bend in any way. But if he had a good client relationship, this could go back and forth for some time, and you'd go through not only two iterations, but sometimes a third. And that resulted in happy clients and good houses, very often houses that were worked particularly well for the people who wanted them. Cement block was a favorite of Wright's. He began using cement or concrete very early on in his work. The Unity Temple in Oak Park, outside just west of Chicago, was one of the very first elegant buildings made in America of concrete. There were inelegant foundations and that sort of thing. And grout buildings go way back in the history of this country to the early 1800s, actually. We have one example in Milton that's quite famous, a hexagonal place, an inn, and a stop on the Underground Railroad. So Wright hardly invented concrete, which a lot of people say he might have. But no, but he used it a great deal, and he used it very, very successfully. Excuse us.
Yeah, excuse us. I forgot to change my phone.
Well, that's all right. I'm glad there wasn't music playing. Concrete block gave rise to something called the Usonian automatic. Wright designed houses for the middle class that he hoped that middle-class clients would make themselves. And they were called the Usonians, and they began with a kind of sandwich, wooden sandwich wall in the 1930s, and evolved into a concrete block system called the Usonian automatic in the 1940s and 50s. And that's what the client was referring to, I'm pretty sure. Usonian is United States of America, made into some sort of acronym that some say is oven for the United States. Wright would say that. But he wanted it to be a true American-style house. And there are quite a number of them in the Midwest, particularly in Michigan. I think Michigan has more than any other state of those because of a couple of planned subdivisions that never were fully realized in Michigan, related to universities and university professors who like that sort of thing back in the 50s.
Thank you very much for calling. And, Jack, I want to go over again with us, won't you, the Wright – the Frank Lloyd Wright and Like 2008 tour. What can we expect here?
You can expect to see eight places, essentially. The Gobbler Restaurant, houses, and let's see, one, two, three, well, six houses, and a bank.
And to find out more, to get tickets are how much, by the way?
Tickets are $50 for those who do not are not members of our organization.
Okay,
that's just for the tour, for the dinner, and for the Sunday morning brunch. There are extra fees, of course. And to learn about them and the costs, go to writeinwisconsin.org or telephone 608-287-0339.
Okay, 608-287-0339.
And you'll get Sherry, and she's terrific.
Or just go online.
Writeinwisconsin.org. Right. Correct.
Jack, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And that's coming up. That event's coming up the weekend of June 8th.
June 8th. June 6th, 7th, and 8th.
June
7th is the Saturday.
6th, 7th, and 8th. Jack Holseder, our guest today. It was always a pleasure to have him by, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that always happens when we have him on the program. Coming up next, we'll take a look at climate and weather with Professors Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.